Order. We have members present, Representative Costello, Stoltz, Co-Chair Osterman, Representative T. Wilson, Representative Edgman, and Representative Thompson. We have previously excused, I believe, Representative Newman, Representative Guerra, and Representative Holmes, I believe. We have two bills up today, House Bill 134 and House Bill 75. 75 previously heard, 134, this is the first hearing. So, Representative Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. The short history of this bill is that the population of seniors in Alaska is growing faster than any other state in the country. And as we sit here in finance, we've heard from the department about the fastest, you know, the senior population growing. This bill puts in statute as a policy matter something that the department has been doing already. And Mr. Co-Chair, a Medicet is something that is prescribed by a physician for a patient. It's specifically prescribed for patients that will have many prescriptions, and it's what I would consider an enhanced pharmacy service, where a pharmacy, many pharmacists will work together to put together a packet for the patient so that they are not overburdened and overwhelmed with multiple prescriptions and the different timing of having to take those. We know that one of the main reasons that seniors go to the ER is because of medication issues. What this bill aims to do is put in statute, in policy, a program that the department has been running, and the purpose of my introducing this legislation is so that over time in our future we can have more seniors staying at home, seniors who are able to stay at home if it were not for their complicated prescription regimen. So we're seeing the higher cost of care that is needed as seniors move out of their homes. And what this bill does essentially, Mr. Co-Chair, is allow for the department to have a statutory authority for this program. To the department and the state's credit, we've been on the cutting edge of offering this kind of service to our vulnerable populations. And I felt that it was important that this type of program not be driven by a regulation environment, but that the legislature is condoning and approving and supporting this type of program. So, Mr. Speaker, with that, we do have a five-minute video, if you're so inclined, and my aide, Charles Ginchard, is available to go through a sectional.
Why don't we watch the movie?
We didn't bring popcorn. Oh, you want to start it? Okay.
Welcome, Mr. Ginchard. And who produced this?
This was, Mr. Co-Chair, for the record, my name is Charles Ginchard, staff representative Costello. This was produced by Geneva Woods Pharmacy in Anchorage.
Are more risk for having more chronic medical problems, but also more severe medical problems. And when you come up with a new treatment plan, they're more likely to have non-compliance with the regimen we prescribe because it's hard to change their routine.
My mother had three strokes. I can honestly tell you when she came home from the hospital, she had close to 20 different meds. It was so much.
The patient with chronic diseases may need medications that have to be administered multiple times during the day. We generally offer the patients with a big bottle of a medication that they need to figure out when and how often they're required to take that medication.
The social worker at the hospital recommended an agency that came to the house and saw what I was doing, and that's she immediately suggested MedSet. I had no clue on what MedSet is all about.
So she is checking every one of the pills in there to make sure the correct ID is on the medication this pharmacist here will first look at the orders to see if they see any interaction possible.
And I think that was one of the best decisions that I've ever made. Because not only it helped me, I was able to go back to work, I'd be able to put upon my other siblings to help with caring of my mother and make sure that her kids were taken on time and the right one.
The one thing that is most often needed when they come to this environment is medication assistance. And that is where the staff go and get the medicine handed to the resident. And the thing is that we are not allowed to administer.
This is what a patient would take in the morning. So you would have this, to where if many medications are in here, you'd have that many different bottles. So you have to try to manage so many bottles compared to just opening this pouch and taking everything out.
And a significant portion of hospital and nursing home readmissions are attributed to medication non-compliance. Studies have shown that about $290 billion costs are added to the U.S. healthcare system annually because of the non-compliance.
When you look at the difference between a skilled facility and assisted living, you're talking maybe $14,000 a month to maybe $47,000 a month. If you take somebody who lives at home, and they can still manage at home, but they just need, you know, this MediSet to help them stay independent, then you look at someone who's independent in their home that now might have to go to assisted living, again, their private home, to $47,000 a month. But MediSet allows an untrained person to safely assist with medications for somebody. Or someone who's in their own home who gets a MediSet delivered to them, it allows them to possibly maintain some more independence. Many of our residents have changes to their MediSets weekly, sometimes more than once a week. That means that this MediSet program, we would have all these meds here, and it would essentially, most of those medications would go to waste because they would have to dispose of all of the medications. One example of this is, say someone has prescribed something and they have an allergic reaction to it. I think that it's a valuable service. I think it's one that our industry cannot do without. I think that from a legal standpoint, you would be jeopardizing any of us who are licensed people. Many of the people that come to us may not have families, may not have a lot of resources.
I want to be able to take care of them too, that's it. Because it's just how we were brought up.
Lights back on. Representative Costello.
Mr. Co-Chair, if you're so inclined, my aide would be willing to walk through the sectional.
Okay, that's, and I guess you can give us your take on how this went from a bill that there were serious fiscal concerns on to now has a zero fiscal note. That's, we want to know how you did that so we can replicate it.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Charles Ginshard, staff to Representative Costello. First to the committee was distributed an explanation of changes. I'll speak to that very generally. The original version of this bill still had the same intent as the version that is in front of you. However, it was restructured very differently. In discussions with the department, the bill was rearranged. That basically eliminated a lot of unintended costs that the bill would have incurred on the department. Moving on to a sectional explanation of the bill itself, beginning on page 1, line 7, paragraph A, this is the paragraph that would establish the fee. There are a number of qualifiers in this paragraph. First, on line 8, the department shall establish a fee. At the end of line 8, you'll see that it says to pay a qualified pharmacy. That essentially is, will in a later paragraph define what goes into a MediSet. On line 9 of paragraph A, I'll point out that this fee is for a prescription that requires scheduled units of use. That's where it essentially says that the physician must put on the prescription that someone needs this medicine.
What do you mean by needs this, that they need in that package form or each individual component? What does that mean?
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. That specifies that for a prescription to qualify for the Medicet, the prescribing physician must physically write Medicet on that prescription. Moving on to paragraph B, occurring first on line 13 of page 1, this spells out what pharmacies are qualified to expense or what a pharmacy must do to be qualified. You'll see that on page 2, beginning on line 3, there are 5 criteria. These essentially are the cost drivers for a Medicet. You'll see a lot of them are things that a pharmacist would do in dispensing any prescription. However, they do go a little bit farther above that to include consolidating all of a patient's prescriptions. Number 2 is actually creating the medication compliance packaging or the plastic packaging that you saw. Number 3 there occurring on line 7 is the quarterly review with the recipient or their representative to assure compliance. Number 4 is where the pharmacies will actually report that compliance back to a physician. And, of course, number 5 there on line 12 is delivering the Medicet packaging to the recipient. The next paragraph, paragraph C, occurs on line 13. This language was inserted at the recommendation of the department working with some other members as well. And essentially, this was trying to maintain the scope of individuals who are currently eligible for the service so that when it was put into statute, it would be those same individuals. The next paragraph, the bottom of page 2, this is some definitions. On line 24, medication compliance packaging is defined. That's the actual plastic packaging you saw. And then unit of use is defined. And essentially that is one pill in one part of that packaging. On page 3, we have the last two sections of the bill. These both concern the effective date. Section 2 essentially says because any change to the state Medicaid program is contingent on federal approval, this specifies that, and then Section 3 is saying that once that federal approval has been received, that the effective date will be contingent on that approval. And, Mr. Chairman, that concludes my explanation of the bill. I'd be happy to answer questions.
There are some issues involved in current contract negotiations regarding pharmacies and so forth. Have you guys looked at how this interplays with any of that on some pharmacies in certain parts of the state are asking for some very large payments in their negotiation? Are you at all familiar with that?
Mr. Kocher, we are familiar. However, we have not heard or we have not been informed or we haven't been able to identify that this would affect those issues. And if I may, Mr. Co-Chair,
please.
If Mr. Ginshard could walk through again why the fiscal note is so much less than it was in the previous committee, I think that would be helpful to the members.
Certainly. Representative Costello, through the chair, one of the specific changes, if you look at page 2, beginning on line 3, those 5 cost drivers, in a previous version of the bill, it was worded in such a way that the department felt that they would need to establish a fee for each of those cost drivers. So in the version that you see before you, that is not the case. The fee is established in paragraph A, and it essentially establishes one fee in paragraph A, and the department, when doing cost surveys of pharmacies, will consider those five cost drivers that appear on page 2. So it should be very clear to the department this is requesting one fee to be established. Another significant change that was made to the bill to lower the fiscal note: a previous version of the bill would have required the department to reimburse for transportation services if Medi-Set services were not available in someone's community. A previous version of the bill said that the department would pay for transportation of Medi-Set services to that community. That entire paragraph was deleted from the bill, and from what I understand, that was a significant piece of lowering the fiscal note.
Representative Osterman.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I guess I need a little bit more basic information on Medi-Set as to, is it a current program we have in the state of Alaska right now?
Through the chair, Co-Chair Osterman, it is. And as the department was reworking their regulations, they reached a point where it looked like they might get rid of this program. And so at that point, I was contacted and asked to whether or not I'd be interested in bringing this as a policy decision to the legislature and putting it in statute. And that's where I felt like it was, with our growing senior population, that this is something that, as a representative for District 20, I felt like it's an important enough program that we should, moving forward, knowing that our senior population is growing, put it in statute so that we know this program will continue and that seniors who would otherwise have to leave their homes could now stay in their homes.
Mr. Co-Chair, okay. In the past, has Medicaid paid the costs that we're talking about within this bill?
Through the co-chair, I'd prefer the department respond.
We have Ms. Brody who will hold that question.
Come back to her with that question. The next question is, what is the criteria for how Medi-Set would, is there a number, is it based on the number of pills that they have, that the patient has to take every day, or what is the criteria that would, that kicks in this Medi-Set that then charges Medicaid to pay for it?
Mr. Co-Chair. Through the co-chair, Co-Chair Osterman, because in order to receive your medications in a Medi-Set packaging unit or packaging, the doctor has to prescribe it, and those decisions that the doctor makes, I'm sure, have to do with the vulnerability of the patient and the complexity of the medication. So, for example, in the video you saw someone with dozens of prescriptions. Personally, if I have two or three, with different times of day that you have to take it, it's that complexity that the doctor takes into consideration as to whether or not this patient would benefit from a Medi-Set packaging.
Maybe somebody in the department can answer that question as well, because I seems to be ripe for abuse without some definitive things within regulation or law, or maybe it is in regulation, I'm not sure, because I don't understand. This is my first exposure to this Medi-Set program. I can see the benefit, obviously, for people who are in a position where they're taking such a strong regimen of medication, but I'm looking at the other end of it. How far down does it go, and how far expensive does it get?
Thank you. My first exposure is when one of my colleagues wrote a Compass piece that everybody in our senior centers read, and they said they got me real involved. Involved in it, because they said it's one of those things that helps them triage the level of care and for the most efficiency and keeping people out of required care. Representative Costello.
And through,
were you the person that wrote that?
Yes. through one coach or to the other. I think the concern for abuse is warranted, and one of the facets of this program that is appealing to me is that in one way you're actually reducing the opportunity for abuse, because you can imagine that in that packaging, if there's 15 medications without Medisset, there would be 15 bottles with month-long prescriptions sitting in a person's home. And as was brought up in the video, if, for example, you have a contraindication or a pharmacist realizes that, gosh, this person shouldn't be taking these two, they will stop that prescription, or if they have a reaction to it, they will stop the prescription. And if that were to happen without Medisset, then you have to dispose of those medications. And I don't know if any of you have heard on the radio that there's a federal program where they, you know, bring in medication so that you don't have them sitting around in a home. And you can imagine in a nursing home or some sort of home-based setting, those individuals who might be interested in acquiring medications, it wouldn't be hard to figure out who in your neighborhood is receiving this who might have medications on the shelf. And so I think the overall interest in reducing abuse I think the scale tips on the side that you are actually preventing more abuse by having a Medisset program than you would if all these bottles are just sitting in a home in that situation where they're sitting there, and if you don't use them, then you have to dispose of them.
Thank you. Representative Wilson and then Thompson, and then I think we want to get to Ms. Brody next, and that may clear up some of the questions. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The way I'm reading section C on page 2, that if I had my grandmother in my home and she needed something like this, that unless she was disabled or blind or on the waiver service, she would not qualify for this. Is that correct?
Representative Wilson through the chair.
We'll defer that one to Ms. Brody.
Okay. And then the other question.
I hope is listening to all these. I'm writing them down.
And I guess the other, I just want to find out how this fits in with our retirement system as well, why we wouldn't cover seniors underneath our retirement, not just Medicaid. So that's probably a department question as well.
Okay. Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I just was curious about the transportation costs that were eliminated out of here. Co-Chair's district and my district, probably no problem, but when you get into Representative Edgman's district, how do they get delivered? I mean, how is there not a cost involved in transportation?
Representative Thompson, through the chair, a mandate for or the ability to be reimbursed for transportation services still exists at the regulation level. We just removed that mandate from this bill.
So, through the chair, is there a future problem we might run into with transportation? I just want to make sure we cover all that. And I know it eliminated it from the fiscal note, but at the same time, are we taking care of the people in the remote areas?
Representative Thompson, through the chair, that's a question I would defer to the department.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
We don't figure out through regulation. We'll get it through litigation, right? So, we are going to go next to, I want to get the department on record, Ms. Brody from Anchorage.
Yes, for the record, this is Margaret Brody. I'm the Director of Healthcare Services.
Okay, I think you've, I'm assuming you've been listening.
I have.
Okay, did you hear the questions?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, why don't you, I would like to have a general statement of position from the department and discuss the evolution and integrate within your answer the responses to the questions.
Yes, Mr. Chair. The department supports the Medisset program. It is a valuable service to recipients to have all their medications packaged for each day. It has the added bonus of the pharmacy being able to check to ensure that there aren't any adverse drug interactions. So they're looking at everything that the individual is prescribed and seeing how they work or don't work with each other, and can contact the prescriber if something is going to have a bad reaction, and see if they want to prescribe something different. The transportation costs are actually included in the cost of dispensing. When we do our survey every 2 years, we take into consideration all the costs, and that includes delivering them, whether it's through mail or however they get them delivered to the rural areas. So that is included in the dispensing fee that they receive. It's all inclusive. I just do want to point out that it's not just individuals on the waiver program that can get Medisets. Anybody who is prescribed Medisets can get them. And the majority of the medications for seniors are actually covered under Medicare Part D rather than Medicaid.
Representative Thompson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. In the bill on page 2, line 10, polypharmacy, how would one pharmacist know if there was another prescribing? I mean, it seems, is there coordinations there? We have two different locations that are prescribing. How is that coordinated?
It's page 2, line 10.
It is coordinated through a database that they input all the drugs that are prescribed into. And it's not real time, but it's uploaded once a month, which should pick up the different drugs. And it is also up to the individual to notify their pharmacist as to other prescriptions that they may have.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So where in the bill would I find that it would cover anyone who was prescribed by a physician, that they would be covered underneath this bill? Because I see in C on page 2 that it appears to be very specific on who we're going to cover. I'm looking for a lifeline.
Representative Wilson, through the chair, there is criteria for Medisets where it actually has to be medically necessary. So this criteria here is outlining the medical necessity to have a Mediset.
Follow-up?
Representative Wilson.
So if I am on the state health insurance retirement plan and it's and I would hope everything's medically necessary, would I be able to have this medicine done for myself?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, I do not know what the state retirement plan covers and does not cover.
This legislation is dealing with the Medicaid and Medicare recipients, and that's the other part's a negotiation part.
I think I can answer that.
But Mr. Co-Chair, but they just said everything was covered as long as it was medically necessary, and now we're saying only if.
Why don't you clarify, is that in the context of this coverage, or is it everything covered?
Mr. Chair, I was speaking for Medicaid.
Okay, so one other follow-up?
Yes, ma'am.
So just Medicaid, if we're trying to keep people in the home, I don't understand that portion, but I'll go to the sponsor with that later. But so if I'm in my home, though, and I'm not under any of these five on page 2, do I qualify?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, if the physician or the pharmacist finds it medically necessary outside of these five, you could qualify.
Okay, I just don't understand why we're listing the five then if that's the criteria. So I guess I just don't understand it myself.
Representative Guttenberg.
Mr. Chair, I think she just answered my question or did a clarification, and I think it went to if the doctor prescribes something and it's covered under your plan, you get it. You can get it. it's paid for. So I don't think she's the expert on our Alaska Care to answer that question to know what it is. But I think a lot of things, these are only for people under this program. If any of our health insurance coverage covers it and the doctor prescribes it, we could get it.
Thank you. Representative Edgman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm still working on getting some baseline information here. Is this bill tailored towards the developmentally disabled?
Representative Costello.
The bill is not tailored towards anyone specifically other than somebody who would benefit by having packaged prescriptions.
He's managing a big pile of bottles of pills, right?
So a lot of different, if you were to draw a Venn diagram, it would include a lot of subsets of individuals.
Okay, and if I might, Mr. Chairman, I was just reading through some of the letters of support, and there's references to developmentally disabled and so forth, but the bill itself is all-inclusive, but as you just said, one of the subset or one of the smaller group of beneficiaries would be those that are disabled.
Mr. Jesse is online as one of the public testifiers. He may elaborate on that subset of Alaskan citizens. Representative Osterman.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Ms. Brody, my question dealt with if you were Medicaid eligible, the doctor prescribes a single pill and says in his prescription that it's Medicaid eligible. Is that reasonable?
Representative Osterman, through the chair, the Medicaid is for multiple prescriptions, more than one. So it would not be appropriate for one medication to be packaged in that manner.
So I'll take that to say that two pills then qualify, and you could have how many across the state that are receiving two medicines that the doctor felt that Medicaid should kick in. Is that within your program, within your regulations, is that permitted?
Representative Osterman, through the chair, yes, it is.
Representative Munoz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Brody, do we currently have Medicaid in place? And if so, when is – I think I heard in the earlier testimony that a decision was made to discontinue the service, and that's why we're working on the legislation. Could you tell me what's currently being offered?
Representative Munoz, through the chair, Medicaid was not being discontinued. It was we had a change in regulation that changed the dispensing fee to once a month, and that gave the impression that the Medicaid program was going away. It has never gone away and is in practice now.
If I can continue that, please. Thank you. So if this passes, then would that fee continue once a month, and is it per customer or is it per prescription? Could you give a little more detail, please?
Representative Munoz, through the chair, the dispensing fee would be more often, but would be decreased by the amount of this Medicaid fee, so that they would be paid the same amount. We would just change how we pay. We would pay a dispensing fee plus a Medicaid fee, which would equal what our dispensing fee is now. Okay. And it can be paid more than once a month.
Okay, and one final follow-up. And what is the estimated cost of adding the Medicaid fee?
Representative Munoz, through the chair, there isn't an added cost because we're decreasing the dispensing fee by that dollar amount.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Osterman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've only got one testimony in front of me in my file. It's the 01, and I heard that there was a original fiscal note. Is there, before, I'm assuming you're not moving this bill out of here today, so prior to having this bill back.
Okay, before, my assumption has changed now since
we've been
here.
I'd like to have that fiscal note to look at it.
The old fiscal note?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Right there. Mr. Chair.
Discussion. Representative Guttenberg.
I want a clarification on something I just heard from the Ms. Morse. Is that her name?
Ms. Brody.
Okay, thank you.
We're almost the same.
Almost close. Ms. Brody, did I hear you say that when this program kicks in, there's a reduction in the prescription and the dispensing fees? Is there any other reductions in pharmaceutical fees that goes along with this program? Because what I thought I heard you say is that in the end, it might be fiscally neutral.
Representative Guttenberg, through the chair, there aren't any other fees. So to give an example, right now we'd pay $10 for a dispensing fee. So if this bill were to pass for Medi-Set pharmacies, we would pay an $8 dispensing fee and $2 for the Medi-Set. So it equals $10.
So
there's two steps instead of one.
But you are saying it is revenue neutral. It doesn't cost any more.
That is correct, sir.
Okay. Well, please remain online, Ms. Brody. We're going to go through the rest of the public testimony, and let me come back to you. I'm going to go to Ketchikan, Barry Christensen.
Yes, hello.
Welcome, sir.
Hello, I'm sorry. Yep, I'll go ahead. This is Barry Christensen. I'm a pharmacist, and I'm co-chair of the legislative committee for the Alaska Pharmacists Association, and we're testifying today in support of the legislation brought forth by Representative Costello, and we appreciate her efforts to try to make sure that all eligible Medicaid recipients are able to receive Medi-Set services. We, as associations, had some concerns in the past about the department not recognizing some pharmacies, particularly in rural areas, for being able to do med sets. This bill would help correct that, and we appreciate that. I do, after hearing some the comments here this morning, I do have a couple of concerns or questions just in regards to on page 2, line section D. It does indicate that if one or more prescriptions have been divided, that they will qualify for med sets. And I think that's important to recognize that even if you only have one medication, if it's to be taken four times a day, oftentimes having a med set to help the patient do that is very important. So just the number of prescription may not be what we're looking at there, but the complexity of the prescription. And then my second comment is I'm a little confused about the department's explanation of the fee set up, and perhaps that's something that can be talked about in the future. And I'll be online, or if anybody has any questions now, I'll be glad to answer them.
Questions for the pharmacist? Representative Osterman and then Guttenberg.
Thank you. Mr. Christensen, you live in Ketchikan?
That's correct. I'm a practicing pharmacist.
And the Medi-Set, you guys have Medi-Set in Ketchikan, and you dispense medicines through that?
That's correct. We do.
Is it just in Ketchikan, or do you serve outlying areas with Medi-Set?
Representative, through the chair, we just basically do the Ketchikan area. We don't do any, for example, mailing out of Medi-Sets to other more rural areas.
All right. Thank you.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Christensen, do you think the quarterly review of the as is stated in this bill of the patient's the administration of the patient's prescriptions is adequate? Or do you just do that on a normally basis, just looking at what they're doing?
Representative Gendrick, to the chair, you know, quite frankly, in our pharmacy, every time we do a med set for a patient, we're doing a review. I think the quarterly part ensures that everybody's doing that, and that if, you know, if there are problems, they're brought forth to the patient's prescriber. So in answer to your question, I think quarterly should be like probably a minimum that someone's looking over everything that's going in, and I think typically it probably is.
If I follow through.
From Gunberg.
Thank you. In Ketchikan, how many pharmacies are there in Ketchikan? What I'm getting...
Gunberg, to the chair, there are four pharmacies, three private and one tribal health pharmacy. My family operates the only independent community pharmacy, and we're the only pharmacy in town that does med sets.
Okay. Follow through, Mr. Chair. So my question deals with the polypharmacy question and checking up that the patient's getting prescriptions only one place. How do you deal with that? I mean, you've got four, other communities have less, and some have a lot more.
Sure. Through the chair, as Margaret Brody alluded to, all of our prescriptions are processed what's called point of sale, what's real time. So we enter the prescription into the database. The database tells us if the patient has received any other prescriptions from any other provider.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've heard in other times that the prescription database is not as up to date as it needs to be for these folks. But thank you.
Representative Munoz.
Thank you. Mr. Christensen, could you please elaborate on your comment that mentioned concern over the department's interpretation of the fee payment?
Yeah, Representative Mendoza, to the chair. I guess my concern is that it does cost more to provide services in a med set than it does to put pills in a bottle, basically. So my concern is that the fees would adequately cover that. And the way it was kind of described is we'd be getting paid the same to put pills in a bottle as we would putting them in a med set. That's kind of how it appeared, kind of how it sounded to me. So, like I said, I had a little concern with that. If I just may real quickly address Representative Guttenberg's question regarding a database, a few different databases. We have lots of different databases, but in this case, we have the Alaska Medicaid prescription drug database, and then we have what we call a prescription drug monitoring program, which just addresses narcotics. And the Alaska Medicaid point of sale program is real time. The prescription drug monitoring program that's in effect is not real time. The data is downloaded at different times. So I hope that helps clarify that question.
Representative Wilson.
Do you do Medi-Set for other insurance besides Medicaid?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, to my knowledge, most other insurances do not cover the extra filling costs associated with Medi-Set. So most of the time, that cost is borne by the patient or their family.
Thank you.
And maybe you guys in Ketchikan get some money from that Sitka pharmacy that wants to charge the state $40 a prescription service charge, kind of playing hardball. So you can do a Medi-Set to Sitka and help the state plan. Next, we have Patricia Center from the Alaska Nurses Association. Have you heard about that one?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Patricia Center, and I am Professional Practice Director for the Alaska Nurses Association. For many years of my nursing career, I spent working as a home health nurse, so I'm aware of the importance of medication compliance packaging for keeping seniors, the mentally ill, persons with intellectual deficits, and others healthy and in their homes. Medication compliance packaging is also important for assisted living facilities who provide affordable care for those who can no longer live independently. These medication compliance packaging have several benefits. One of them is it allows families and others to monitor whether the patient is taking their medication properly, and thus allows for more quick feedback of where a problem may be in the prescription or how it is being utilized by the patient. It also, these Medisets are usually made up on a weekly basis, so this means that if there is a change in a prescription, Medicaid is not paying for a whole month's worth of prescription. So let's say that after 1 week of a prescription that was dispensed for a month, the prescription is changed. Medicaid would have paid out for that whole month rather than paying for only 1 week. There's also been the concern raised with these weekly for people that have controlled substances. If an elderly person has a controlled substance and is only dispensed once a week, there is less of this sitting in the home, and so there's less likely that those medications are going to be diverted by someone. So HB 134, one of its main benefits is that it allows pharmacies throughout Alaska to be able to provide medication compliance package medications. The current regulations restrict this to only pharmacies that do high volume of Medisets, but in small communities, there's no way that a pharmacy could survive financially by only doing Medisets rather than doing it as part of their regular business. We hope that you support 134 and pass it.
Thank you, Ms. Center. I don't see any questions. Next, we'll go to God's Country, Mike Coons.
Yes, this is Mike Coons calling from Palmer. I am sitting here listening to this thing, just kind of listening in on it at first, and I'm just more and more confused as time goes by. The very first question that I came up with, is this about Medicare or is this about Medicaid? Because the bill says Medicaid, but yet the presentation was all about seniors, which would be Medicare. So I'm really kind of confused on that. And I take it that this Medisett is a packaging of meds for 1 week. It has some positives that from a 22-year paramedic standpoint. I'm retired now, but I've seen enough of this to have a pretty good idea of what's going on. I'm really glad to see that this would most likely reduce patients having multiple docs and the multiple docs giving out multiple meds, because I know the pharmacies have really gotten a lot better over the years as far as making sure that patients aren't getting meds that are counterproductive to each other or harmful to the patient. But I think this is definitely, from this standpoint, that's a good step. But my question, one of the big questions I keep on going back to is why can't nursing staff do this without the extra cost of packaging and sending these out weekly? It doesn't seem to me, at a gut level, that this would be more cost effective. And then lastly, as a paramedic, we've seen so many times we go to patients' homes and we ask them to see what kind of medications you're on, and they hand us a shoebox with bottles upon bottles upon bottles, and you got to go through each and every one of them trying to figure out what they are taking and what they're not taking. And then this would help from a EMS and medical care provider standpoint, giving us a really clear idea of what medications the patient is on. Even a person that's going into ER being driven in by family, they would have that with them, and the ER would have a really good idea of exactly what they're taking, dosage and everything else, instead of having to wade through all that. So I'd kind of like to know what this Medisett really is all about and why this is this Medicare or Medicaid, and I'm just going to sit back and listen. Thank you.
Representative Costello is going to briefly respond.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Coons. I think just last week you were testifying on another piece of legislation, so I want to just comment on how your citizenship is impressive, really, that you follow so many issues. It's for both Medicare and Medicaid recipients, because if in the bill, a child would not be eligible for Medicare. However, they would for Medicaid. And also we have heard in testimony, although the bill is not as clear on this point, which Representative Wilson brought up, is that if a physician prescribes it, then that is sort of the call for the individual to have their medications packaged in this way. As far as your question about the true costs of the bill or what the cost savings are, the real reason for the bill, and unfortunately when we get fiscal notes, we don't actually, in most cases, get an indication on the note about the overall savings, if there is such a savings. And from what we've heard in House Finance, from the testimony from the department and others, is that our senior population is growing rapidly, and we do know that by having medications packaged in such an easy to administer manner, that it is allowing individuals who would otherwise, without the Medi-Set, they would otherwise have to go find a different living situation that we do know is more costly. So the value is in the quality of life for the individual who's now able to stay at home. It's in the quality of life for the family members who can be around that individual without the headache of having to administer a bunch of pills. And however, you do bring up an interesting question, which I would like answered, which is if an EMT were to come to a home where somebody is receiving Medi-Set, is there anything on the packaging that would then indicate what's in it, just so that that person is educated on what is being taken? And if I think that would be a question for somebody else.
You know, one of the projects, I'm active in my Lions Club, and we initiated a program called Vial of Life, and an oversized prescription bottle. It's a contents of that, and you put it it's in the refrigerator, and you put a sticker on your door so the EMTs or the paramedics know that you have it. And just on a small scale, we probably distribute about 10,000 in my home area, but it was a tool that we worked with the fire department, and we probably need to do it again because those things, people move and so forth. That's a big tool walking in there, and if the EMT or the paramedic or the fireman can go right to sees the sticker, much like they see the you have so many pets there, and they know to help assist. That was one thing we did through the private sector, through a private initiative. But I know exactly what Mr. Coons is talking about. Is we worked with our volunteer fire departments and our Station 11 folks and out in South Chugiak, or I guess they call it Eagle River. But that's one way. And I can't imagine it would be very tough for the Medi-Set folks to make up something like that for folks to assist paramedics. These are folks that often get visits, so that's... I think the folks that are involved are listening, and a lot of these things can be accomplished very easily by just throwing that in. If you're prescribing dispensive that amount, it's not very hard to throw in a $2 kit that tells the responders what's there. I think that ought to just be something they do and absorb it. I would think just out of good practice, much like the pharmacy gives you away the 7-day. Just about everyone I mentioned will give you those gratis because it's good for you to manage your pills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Co-Chair. And Mr. Coons asked a good question. Whether the pharmacist or somebody is on board, are these individually daily packaged Medi-Sets labeled with what's in them? Is Mr. Christensen still on?
Well, we'll come back to we'll let Mr. Coons finish up, and I think we did, and we'll dispense with his questions. And thank you, Mike. And we'll come back after we listen to Mr. Jesse. I'm sure Mr. Christensen is hanging on, as he said he was. Mr. Jesse.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Jeff Jesse. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. And we are certainly supportive of HB 134. It not only benefits seniors, but anyone who is looking at trying to stay in a least restrictive environment that has a complicated medication regime, and complicated is a relative term. what may be quite straightforward for you or I with somebody with an intellectual disability or some other impairment, these polypharmacy prescriptions can be very confusing. Not all of our beneficiaries, of course, live in a environment where there are nursing services available on a regular basis, nor do we really want them to have to be in that type of environment at that type of cost. For many of our beneficiaries, whether they're seniors, people with developmental disabilities, people with significant mental illnesses, keeping track of these various medications, and not only the different medications, but also, as the pharmacist testified, medications that may be on a different schedule. You may have one medication that you're taking once a day, another you're taking twice a day. You know, there are a lot of permutations. Having a Medi-Set available to folks that are trying to maintain as much independence as they can and be able to manage their own care is really essential for them to be able to maintain in those environments and not require the level of expensive oversight of regular nursing care or other medication oversight. One advantage which Mr. Coons brought up to the Medi-Set system as well is if an EMT gets a shoebox full of medications, that raises the possibility of what medications the individual may be taking, but it provides usually very little, if any, information about which of those medications were actually taken, and if so, were they taken in the proper dosage at the proper time. The advantage of the Medi-Set is that it is laid out by dose and combination, making it much easier for an EMT or an emergency room physician to take a look at the Medi-Set and go, okay, they did or did not take these different packages of medications at the prescribed time. So I should have a pretty good idea now of what their dose actually is. So we are very supportive of the legislation. We think it's important for various numbers of our beneficiaries to maintain their independence without the need to go to more expensive nursing oversight in their living environments. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Representative Osterman.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Jeff, would you, I'm still a little confused on the basis of the legislation that's in front of us. And if I understand correctly, Medi-Set is a program that's already there. Medi-Set is being run by the department through regulations. They're going to continue to run the program. They were not going to drop it. They were just changing their payment schedule to, I think, to save them more money on their operational cost. What is the difference that this bill does compared to what is currently being done?
Well, Representative Osterman, through the chair, I'd have to look in more detail at exactly what the department's policies are at this point in time. But I think the big advantage of having this bill passed and becoming law is it lays out this program, the requirements and the criteria in statute. It makes it much easier for people to predict exactly what this program looks like, what the criteria is, and how it's implemented. So I can't say at this point that I know of any substantive differences between the regulations and the policies of the department versus this bill, but I think there is a value in having this program laid out in statute so that the criteria and the process is clear for everyone to see.
Thank you, Jeff.
And I think it's fair to say that Representative Costello wouldn't have introduced this if this hadn't been at a different position point in the department, and that there has been, I guess the term other politicians use, there's been an evolving position and an adaptation. Thank you very much, Mr. Jesse. There was a question for the pharmacist while he was on. Okay. Mr. Christensen, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Fire away.
And I can address.
Representative Guttenberg has a question.
Of the Alaska Pharmacists Association. The question was regarding our med sets. How are they labeled? And the question is, they are governed by pharmacy regulation, so it doesn't matter if it's a med set done for a Medicaid patient or anybody else. On the packaging, it will have the prescription number, the actual description of the medication, if it's a pill, orange-colored, et cetera. It will have what the medication is used for example, hypertension, and it will have a dosing schedule, if it's given once a day, twice a day, et cetera. So they're clearly labeled, and so for the purposes of, like, the paramedics showing up, as mentioned, they can look at that. They can see exactly what their medications are and when they're supposed to take them and if they've taken them for the day or the week or whatever. Just to qualify my earlier comments, too, the one thing that this bill, again, would put in statute is the ability for any pharmacy that's billing Medicaid to be able to do med sets. The current regulations state that the only pharmacy that are doing a high volume, greater than 75% of their business, be able to do med sets, and this bill would make sure that all pharmacies could. Thank you, and I'll stand the line.
Thank you. Just to follow up,
Denver.
Mr. Christensen, what is the packaging of the Medi-Set? Is it a little baggy, or is it a pill? Is it a, which is what I used when I did this, or is it a pill bottle? What is it actually? What are they receiving?
Mr. Chair, the packaging is typically called. It's called lots of different things. Sometimes it's even referred to as a bubble pack or a bingo pack. They're typically such that once they leave the pharmacy, they have to be pushed out. So they may be set up for just once a day or twice a day or four times a day, but they're actually bubbled so that for example, the morning dose, you would know if the morning dose was taken by the patient because it would actually be pushed out of the plastic packaging. Does that make sense?
And you may remember, I believe it was 2 years ago or maybe 3 years ago, we had the issue with the veterans' domiciliaries and the VA issues about the bubble packs and the reliability that gave for the and the amount that those were dispensed. It was a small subset of this larger issue we dealt with in our veterans and pioneer homes a couple years ago, and a bill passed. I think it might have been Senator Wilikowski's bill. That was a subset, similar type thing, a bubble pack, and it was a management tool that the Pioneer Homes and the Veterans Domiciliaries wanted. Are there any other, is there anyone else wishing to testify in this bill? Here in Juneau? We'll go ahead and close public testimony. We'll take one last round. If anybody had any questions remaining for Ms. Brody, or if you wanted to have her, if not answer today, to come back at the next time we have this bill in committee, Representative Guttenberg and then Osterman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Brody, I'm looking at the fiscal note that we just got.
That's the old one.
It's not zero. It's
That was requested by the chairman to see the previous fiscal note, which was in a previous committee prior to this committee substitute, but that was just for informational purposes.
Okay.
Not to drive. Pardon? Yeah.
All right.
And that was a request from the co-chair, who is obviously chairing the operating budget, keeps an eagle eye on these things. And that's purely for information. And Representative Guttenberg, and then
thank you. There's still a section in it that I want to question. It is in the narrative on page 2, in the second paragraph down, it's just assuming that there's a pharmacy in Anchorage that is expanding that would do this and send it to Fairbanks, and the fiscal notes reflecting that everybody in Fairbanks that is eligible for this would be receiving it from a pharmacy in Anchorage. Right, so it says it's just assuming that everyone that's eligible and $522, and it's adding postage into the bill, which wouldn't mean much, except it adds up to $457,000 a year, and that's built into the fiscal note. That's my question.
Yeah, we're probably not talking stamps. We're probably talking priority insurance.
Yeah.
Representative Costello.
And thank you. And, Mr. Co-Chair, I do appreciate how thorough the committee is by looking at this previous version and having expressed earlier the intention of the bill. You can imagine my surprise when a fiscal note came out for a program the state's already doing. We had assumed there would be no costs associated to a program the state is already doing. And so what we found by working very closely with the commissioner, who met many times in the previous committee, heard this bill several times also, is that that transportation component that we had built into one of the criteria where the department was interpreting the way the bill was written, that each item, which we now have on page 2, where it's listed 1 to 5, they were analyzing a separate reimbursement rate for each, whereas now they do one reimbursement rate. They do not include a separate component for the transportation. And Representative Guttenberg brought up an excellent point, which was there was an assumption made by the department that this program would be expanded to areas that do not have where clients who are eligible are not necessarily taking care taking advantage of the Medi-Set program. In this legislation, we do not require that a certain percentage of the business that is getting the reimbursement do Medi-Set. And so now there are pharmacies in all communities that would be eligible for this reimbursement where they weren't before. So the idea that you would get a Medi-Set out of one community when you could actually get it out of your own would be an interesting proposition. But we, as the sponsor of this legislation, I didn't agree with this fiscal note because of the assumptions that were made. In my estimation, if more individuals in Alaska actually take advantage of Medi-Set, I think that's better in the overall fiscal situation in our state. And it does mention here in 2012 there were about 2,611 individuals who did take advantage of it. What I have found just talking to my friends and going on a police ride-along is that not everyone's even aware that Medi-Set exists. And I think that when I had a family member who was on multiple prescriptions, I would have found this to be incredibly helpful because the time I spent with that family member would be spent with them, not necessarily in front of a whole, entourage of pill bottles trying to figure out which ones to dispense. And so, I do think that we probably will have an opportunity for the department to go into more depth on the changes in the fiscal note at a future meeting.
Representative Osterman.
Thank you, Mr. Coacher, and that is my point. I mean, when the original fiscal note came out, there was a 50-50 match of general funds to the federal funds, and by rewriting the bill, does that mean we don't have general fund match anymore? I question that if the original fiscal note talked about a match at 50%. I know that in Medicaid, there's a lot of the general fund match that we have to put up. So I appreciate the fact that you want the zero fiscal note coming out of committees, but at the same point in time, I want to make sure that we really are not hamstringing, we are really not putting into or creating a more general fund match that we're not aware of. And so, and maybe the department can answer that question. Maybe there is, with the bill written the way it is right now, there is no zero. I mean, there is zero general fund match that we have to put up.
I'm not sure we can get the department to fess up to say that they were padding a fiscal note last year,
the problem is we have it. I mean, and it was originally there. And
we get a lot of fiscal notes from departments where they're seeking to expand positions and so forth, but it's always a balance in how we deal with those. They're not always as... They are different creatures, especially when you're, again, a multi-billion-dollar creature like this. Representative Wilson.
Mr. Chairman, just to finish, when I look at a bill and try to analyze it, I have to go back to zero and ground level and say, For example, I don't have the original bill in front of me. I don't know what changes were made and what happened. I didn't have the original fiscal note in front of me, so I don't know how that complied or changed based upon the rewrite of the CS. So it's sometimes very difficult to sit here and make a decision based upon incomplete information.
That's why we're going to look at it again. Representative Wilson.
I'd just like to – thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to hear from – and it doesn't have to be here, but the Department of Administration, what I heard from the gentleman in Ketchikan was that even if it was medically necessary for our retirees who are on our plan, that it is their expense, where here we're paying for one segment of the population and where the other segment has to put it out their own pocket. So I would definitely like to hear from the Department of Administration and find out why they're not covering something that's medically necessary.
All right. Thank you. We will set the bill aside, and we'll have it back and hopefully allay people's concerns or figure out where we're at for appropriate continued review. We'll just take a brief at ease. House Finance, come back to order after that brief at ease. We have before us the committee substitute for House Bill 75, Representative Costello.
Mr. Co-Chair, I move CS for House Bill number 75, version Oscar.
As the working
draft. For the committee as a working draft.
That I'm going to object just for Mr. George and Mr. DiPartolo will in tandem present it with Mr. George taking the lead.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the House Finance Committee. For the record, my name is Daniel George, and I serve as staff representative Stoltz in the House Finance Committee. Before members is CS for House Bill number 75, Finance, work draft version O. Version O replaces version A, which was previously before the committee on March 14th. Briefly, I will go through the changes which are incorporated into this work draft. On page 1, line 2, in the title, it previously read, requiring each campus of the university to apply for contribution lists. This is requiring the three main campuses of the university. On page, line 4, it previously read, and requiring a university to pay an application fee, and now reads, requiring the university to pay an application fee. Moving on, page 1, section 1 is new. Section 1 spells out that each campus that applies under M of this section applies. So this means that rather than requiring each campus of the university to be to participate and pick give, that each campus may apply. Moving on to page 2. Section 2 is new. Previously, section section in the previous bill had repealed what is on line page 2, line 29, which is number 8. This does not repeal number 8, but rather it amends number 8. This is the audit requirements, and this spells out that this paragraph applies to an organization that is required by the federal government to complete a financial audit by an independent certified public accountant. So the audit requirements apply to organizations that are required to have financial audits federally.
This will separate out the small from the larger foundations with other requirements. That solves the requirement of removing the audits without removing audits where they're probably going to be required anyway. Is that?
That is correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Section 3, it was formerly Section 1, and it has been amended to specify that the $250 fee applies for for each campus that applies for Pick, Click, Give. So you have the three main campuses that are required to apply at $250 each, and then you have the other 14 campuses which may apply, and if they do, they have to pay the fee. Section 4 was formerly Section 2, and it goes on to talk further about how the it previously read that each campus must apply, it now says shall. And additionally, the lines 22 through 24 on page 3 have been added. The University of Alaska may apply for each campus other than the three main campuses to be listed on the contribution list for the current dividend year in the manner prescribed by the department. Section N, subsection N on lines 25 through the end of the bill is new. This specifies that in addition to the application fee, of the $250, the department shall withhold a coordination fee from each organization, foundation, or university campus that receives contributions under this section from the immediately preceding dividend year. This coordination fee shall be in the amount of 7% of the contributions reported and shall be used for purposes of administering this section. And those are the changes, Mr. Chairman.
The testimony that the administrative costs were in excess of that 7%, that they're willing to absorb it, and I had comments, I don't believe on the record, with Mr. DiPartolo, and or maybe I punctuated them in a private conversation, that your division's ability to do it for that percentage requirement.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Dan DiPartolo, the director for the Permanent Fund Dividend Division. And in answer to your question, the operational costs for the divisional side of the work is handled by the $250 fee. The coordination fee that we're speaking of here, we certainly could not do it for the same 7% that was is proposed here. And that's why we would contract that work out as we do now through United Way.
Or another eligible entity.
Or another eligible entity, yes, Mr. Chairman.
I don't. There is no specific designated. It could be another entity, but these are doing it for under the cost. Is that my understanding is that.
That is correct, Mr. Chairman.
Questions for the presenters? Representative Osterman.
Just a quick question in reference to the old bill. Had a repealer on Section 3. Assume that the repealer is not needed because you've amended that section?
Through the Chair, Representative Osterman. Yes, that is correct. So rather than repealing the requirement, which is found in the new CS on page 2, line 29, is number 8, rather than repealing the audit requirements altogether, they have been amended to require that if an organization is required to have a federal audit, that they submit that audit as part of their application.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? I'll remove my objection or objections maintained from anyone else. So the CS is before us. Are there... We had closed public testimony. I would just like to get on the record, I guess. The Rasmussen Foundation has someone here online, or someone online, Mr. Marshall.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jordan Marshall, staff at Rasmussen Foundation in Anchorage. I'm available to make a comment or stand by for questions.
Why don't I think I gave you an invitation to make a comment. Why don't you... either bless or condemn or comment, whatever you want to do.
Well, I'd like to start with a blessing of this CS. It is a welcome CS. The provisions that were just described in the sectional are welcomed by the Picklick Give Partners. We appreciate your willingness to and continued interest in making the Permanent Fund Dividend Charitable Contributions Program, also known as Picklick Give, a stronger and more sustainable program. And that's what we believe this CS will do. The Alaska Legislature has been an excellent partner in providing Alaskans with a safe, secure, and simple way to make optional charitable gifts to Alaska nonprofits when they file online for their PFDs each year. Picklick Give is now in its sixth year and has seen nearly $8 million in designations made by Alaskans like you and me to nonprofit organizations of our choice. Today we have an opportunity to strengthen the program with several enhancements to statute that will help ensure Picklick Give stands on its own two feet. I would note that 6 years ago in the legislature, it agreed to a three-year pilot with funding from Rasmussen Foundation to pay costs of implementation, and I'm pleased to report that 6 years in, the program has been in effect with zero fiscal impact to the state, thanks to private and philanthropic dollars, plus that filing fee. Mr. DiBartolo and Mr. George mentioned. The committee substitute before you will take the charitable contributions program a huge step closer to long-term self-sufficiency. And other than that, I mean, I'll stand by. Essentially, this coordination fee that we've been noting is designed to ensure that participating organizations sustain the program into the future. Also online today to answer questions about adjustments to the audit threshold is Foraker Group Vice President Mike Walsh, and we also have Candace Winkler, the CEO of the Alaska Community Foundation, online to answer questions should the committee members have any.
Are there questions on the change in the audit structure? Instead of the repeal, it's the modified it's our intent and understanding that will remove the threshold for the smaller groups, that it becomes a cumbersome requirement. But if they already have a requirement under the federal government, then that, I think we'll catch the big ones and not over-regulate the small ones. And that was the intent in working. Mr. DiBartolo, on the audit, did you have any position on that, or any comments just of instruction or guidance?
Mr. Chairman, just anecdotally from organizations I've speaking to us, they said that that is burdensome for the small organizations, so this is a positive change.
Any other questions? Are there any amendments on the fiscal notes?
Mr. Kocher, this bill has two fiscal notes. One is OMB component number 1296 from the University of Alaska, the University of Alaska appropriation dated March 20th, 2014, showing no fiscal impact in FY15. Then beginning in FY16, it shows a fiscal impact of $4,300 in FY16, 17, 18, 19, and 20. The second fiscal note is 981 from the Department of Revenue, the Taxation and Treasury Appropriation, dated March 24th, 2014. It shows an indeterminate fiscal note.
We don't see anybody here from the university. This is probably below minimums for them. Any other questions on the fiscal notes? Representative Munoz, would you like to do the honors?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move from committee CS for House Bill 75, version O, with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Hearing no objections, the bill's moved out of committee with the attached two fiscal notes and with individual recommendations. Thank you for your participation both during committee and assisting staff. Thank you, and thank you, Representative Seaton's office, for bringing this issue before us. And next steps forward. This afternoon, we are continuing our discussion on education. I believe, Representative Boston, we have a presentation by Mr. Teal talking about the present and ongoing ramifications and on tours and which is part of our whole education package. So we'll see you at 1:30, and then tonight we will have public testimony on HDR 18. So appreciate everybody's willingness to go to our three-a-days now, which we've done a few of already, and appreciate the hard work and the diligence of this committee. So hope we don't wear you down before the next 28-29 days is up. With that, thank you, everybody. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for keeping us on track. And we will see everybody at 1:30.